Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a... Cussing with America's... Born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome in one fell swoop to the last day of August and Friday on the front porch. It's both, you know. And this is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. We call what we do here conversation radio. Think of it as a little chat that you would have with a few thousand people across your fence in the backyard while the steaks or the ribs or the hot dogs or the weenies or whatever or the tofu is grilling. That's kind of what we like for it to be here. Just a conversation among friends, among neighbors. You can, of course, hear the horn at a wide variety of platforms on the interweb tubes. Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Dar.fm, still working on that. And, of course, easiest of all, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com itself, where you merely have to click Listen Live, and the little player will pop up, and away you go. You can also get the podcasts. The podcasting home and the podcast feed can be found at WhiteRoseSociety.org. No, really and for true, it is Friday on the front porch, and we find ourselves bidding a fond farewell to an August that was a heck of a lot better than was July in oh so many ways. Thanks go out to everyone who has helped us beat the Swede this month, because we did. We made the fundraising goal, which means there will be a September. And starting Monday or Tuesday. Let's work that out. Do you guys have plans Monday? Are you going to be out the roasting marshmallows or whatever? I don't know. Labor Day. Do y'all have plans? Because if there's no sense in me being here, I won't. You're all going to be out, you know, partying and festivizing and whatnot. But otherwise, I will. Might as well work. Going to be here. So let me know. Let's take as the default that, yes, Bob will work Labor Day. Bob works, unless you think otherwise. I'll let y'all make that the decision, because you're the closest I have. Y'all drive the bus. Really. Marty, how about margaritas without salt? Well, if I'm going to do the show on Monday, I'm going to have margaritas without tequila, which at that point in time is just a glass of limeade, isn't it? So, yeah. But it is Friday on the front porch, and I guess you know what we have to talk about. We talk about the old, from time to time, we talk about the old drunk at the end of the bar. Well, let me tell you, back in my day, 9 times out of 10, he's talking to an empty chair next to him. Yeah. You heard it. Sure you did.
So I've got Mr. Obama sitting here, and he's, I just was going to ask him a couple questions, but About I remember. I mean, everybody's crying. Oprah was crying, and I was even crying. And then finally, I haven't cried that hard since I found out that there's 23 million unemployed people in this country. So, Mr. President, how do you handle promises that you made when you were running for election, and how do you handle it? I mean, what do you say to people? Do you just I know people were wondering. You don't have it, okay? What do you mean, shut up? And I know I know you were against the war in Iraq, and that's okay. But you thought the war in Afghanistan was okay. You thought that was something that was worth doing. We didn't check with the Russians to see how they did there for the 10 years. But...
there have been myriad very, very wisecracking tweets about that whole sad, sorry affair. Someone last night tweeting, I thought I'd have to wait till Thanksgiving to see an old man raving at an empty chair. Yeah. Jamel Bowie on Twitter, with what may have been the best take on the whole Clint debacle. This is a perfect representation of the campaign, an old white man arguing with an imaginary Barack Obama. That is just sad. At one point in time, I began to wonder how long we'd have to wait before the right wing began declaring, he was an Obama voter in 2008. He said so. It turns out Clint Eastwood is a double agent. Yeah, he deliberately came in to try to torpedo Willard Bishop Romney's big night. That's what he did. That's why Willard's speech was so off-putting and tone deaf and boring and dull and dangerous, scary and frightening. Because Clint Eastwood, the sabotaged him. That's what he did. Maybe I was wrong. Because the Romney campaign, the first thing they said was, well, you really can't measure the value of this speech in political terms. Shoot, you couldn't measure the value of that speech in English language terms, or coherent terms, or sane terms, or been off the aricept a little too long terms. But that's okay. That's okay. The Romney campaign was ready earlier today, and they trotted out Tara Wall to try to put as brave a face as humanly possible on that hot mess.
Let's talk about the morning after. What was the calculus behind Clint Eastwood and the empty chair?
Well, certainly I think it defines this presidency, the Obama presidency. For one, let me just say I think that last night and the convention whole was really a defining moment for Governor Romney and for the Romney-Ryan ticket. The chair emphasized, I think, what many Americans are asking themselves 4 years later. Where is President Obama relative to his promises made and promises not kept?
Yeah, you mean, lady, like that line that... Clint gave about, did we ask the Russians about Afghanistan? Because that's a man who's lost a grip on any kind of memory of the last decade or so, because he seems to be under the impression that Barack Obama started the war in Afghanistan. I would be the last person on earth to say that maybe looking at the Russian experience in Afghanistan might have been a good idea. But then again, I'm a real weirdo. I'm a history goober. I'm just crazy about the ancient stuff. And I've been saying for how many years now that Alexander the Great couldn't take and hold Afghanistan, and what makes us think that we have even one general approaching the intellect, bravery, and the overall qualities of Alexander the Great. Even one. Because we don't. So I'm there. But he's got the wrong president in the empty chair. That's a question that needs to be addressed to empty chair George Bush and empty soul Dick Cheney and that decent human being's heart that he carries around with him. Who knows? Let's hear him put the brave face on this whole weird thing. Maybe. We'll go back to, what was her name? Tara Wall. Right, sure.
The convention in whole is really a defining moment for Governor Romney and for the Romney-Ryan ticket. The chair emphasized, I think, what many Americans are asking themselves 4 years later, where is President Obama relative to his promises made and promises not kept? And so I think that was pretty descriptive of the fact that President Obama 4 years ago said we'd be at 6% unemployment if we enacted what he believed were his policies that would work.
And Tara Wall, did we? Why, no, Tara Wall, we didn't. We didn't enact those policies. We enacted tax cuts instead. What, the vast majority of the so-called stimulus turned out to be tax cuts for people who didn't necessarily need tax cuts. Instead of pumping the people's money directly into the people's pockets where it could go back in and really do some stimulating. Because when you give rich people a tax cut, they just sock it away into the mattress. Because they don't really need that. They don't really need those funds to go out and buy a new car or a refrigerator or a house. Because 9 times out of 10, they've already got a house and an elevator to go with it. But the truth ain't in them. They're liars. Straight up, and no getting around it.
We see that we've been at 8. Above 8% unemployment nationally, 14.4% in Black communities, and 11% in the Hispanic community. I think these are policies he hasn't answered for, and that's why I think many Americans are left at having to ask essentially, really out loud, where is the president on answering and delivering on some of those promises?
Well, okay, Tara Wall, we'll be happy to ask those questions. But can we ask them of the repig-licking Congress while we're at it? You know, John can't pronounce his own German name, Boner. Ran in 2010, drooling after the idea of becoming Speaker of the House, on the concept of jobs! We're going to have some jobs! But he didn't introduce any jobs bills. There are no jobs. Where are the jobs, John? Not where are the jobs, Barack. I have yet to see a president of the United States who could pass a budget or who could even pass a bill. Not even so much as a stop sign bill on the corner of Maine and Elm. Or Maple and Third, or whatever the reference was in I'm Only a Bill on Capitol Hill. Just can't do it. See, there's a difference between can't do it and won't do it. The president can't pass bills because he's the executive and not the legislature. The Republican legislature, on the other hand, could have passed bills that would have led to jobs and stimulation of the economy, but they refused to because, of course, as chinless Mitch, Mitch my butt, chinless Addison McConnell said, the only job they had was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Sad, isn't it? That one party would behave that way. Some notes coming in suggesting a show on Monday would be welcome. So you guys are going to be around the radio. I'll be around the microphone. Okay? So show on Monday. How's that? Note coming in from Dr. John. He says, as far as Afghanistan is concerned, but Obama supported it then and still does, right? Saying, my point is that Clint's implying that one was right, the other wrong, the Iraq War versus the Afghanistan War versus the Iraq War. The thing is, the Republicans thought they were both good, and with Iran and Syria, hopefully, to their minds, in the bargain. At least Obama's half right, I guess, says Dr. John. Well, I've been hollering get out of Afghanistan for a long time simply because I understand a little bit or know a little bit about the history of trying to conquer that place. It's pretty much unconquerable. It was unconquerable by the mightiest army that has ever marched across, or if not mightiest, most effective, marched across that neck of the woods in, what, the 3rd century before the current era? Right. And the Russians didn't prove any good at it. And the British didn't prove any good at it. The Romans couldn't even get to it. I don't know. Did any of the Chinese dynasties try, or were they too smart to even make the attempt? Oh, no, we're not touching that. What do we look like, crazy? Yeah. So the best and smartest thing we could do would be to get the hell out. I said it when we went in, and I'm still saying it today. War is not an effective breeding ground for democracy, or even something resembling freedom. If by freedom we mean freedom of conscience and freedom of movement and freedom for all people, regardless of gender. It's not a good thing. But mercifully, that god-awful sheets and pillowcases affair is over now. And so we will look to next week to see what the Democratic Convention holds. Honestly, I'd kind of like to be down there, just because I find that sort of thing fascinating. Theoretically, we could have been, but we can't. We just can't. I would love to be down there to go to the Progressive Democrats of America event that's being held. And, of course, I'd like to be down there to just grab the lapels of anybody who will listen and say, hey, by the way, did you know that we're being poisoned to death up in Appalachia? It's not that far from Charlotte. It's just a 45-minute flight from the heart of Appalachia, Charleston, West Virginia, down here to beautiful Charlotte, and my, what a difference it makes. Y'all come on up and see us sometime and maybe help us get some of these thugs to stop blowing us to smithereens. Could you? I'd love to be down there doing that, telling people about the AIC Act and really lighting a fire under folks and making them understand that the AIC Act, H.R. 5959, really is a signature moment for us. It's the kind of thing that would be easy to get behind and easy to drive forward. And what with the knowledge that we have that little itsy-bitsy babies in the womb are being poisoned, We can really hammer. We could really use that that bill to hammer the hypocrisy of the right wing. Thought you cared about the little fetuses there, Representative Boner, Representative Ryan. Thought you cared. Oh, wait, I see. You're right, you're hypocrites. Okay, got it. That didn't take long at all to clear up now, did it? No. So they're gone. They're gone now. I guess they've packed up and they're blowing out of town, and God Almighty knows it'll take forever for the, I don't know, they should probably have some sort of massive cleansing station for all the various and sundry sex workers who were down there. Not because they're dirty, but because being around Republicans will make you feel filthy. Ron, who of course lives in Raleigh, not all that far from Charlotte, said, with gas at $4.02 a gallon, I can't go around the corner, so I'll be here waiting with bated breath. As an aside, did you hear they were thinking of casting Emma Watson as the female lead in the film version of 50 Shades of Grey? Oh, dear. I guess I'm going to have to read that, aren't I? It is the book sensation. I don't think it hasn't been selected. Has it been selected by Oprah's book club? I don't know. I can't imagine Oprah reading 50 Shades of Grey without, you know, having the vapors and needing a fainting couch or something. I don't know. Is it kind of vanilla? I don't know. I haven't. The only thing I know about 50 Shades of Grey is what I heard Gilbert Gottfried read, and I couldn't even get through all of that. Oh, there, Ron, I guess you've got some commiseration from the left coast. Marty writing in, only $4.02 a gallon? $3.79 here. But remember, back in, what, April, the Republicans were predicting that communist Kenyan Muslim of the deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies, he's going to make your gasoline be $10 a gallon by June. Remember when they said that? Because he wants to see you white people suffer. Yeah. By the way, just a reminder, going back to Mr. Eastwood for a moment, I did like that line about how it was a cranky old white man arguing with an imaginary Barack Obama. That really does fit. But I was reminded by Sandra earlier today via Twitter just exactly who that was standing there lecturing the imaginary President of the United States. That was Clint Eastwood addressing the Republican Party. You know, the Republican Party that values above all things traditional Christian family values, just like me and Marvelline have. Right? Don't want none of them homos to be a-getting married, because, you know, that de-unsanctifies the holy religions of the significance of godly ordainment of the marriage. Because Jesus done said so. Well, with that in mind, it is nice to remember that the octogenarian who was the big secret, super-duper, stealth, secret weapon speaker of the night, Clint Eastwood, it is nice to remember that he's had 7 children by 5 different women. That there is what you call some Republican family values. Of course, who am I to say? I mean, I may at some point up and run off with a stripper or something, and goodbye, Agnes. Are you kidding? She'd chase me down with it. No way. Yeah, 7 kids with 5 different women. Woof. I have seen, by the way, via my Facebook page, a couple of Simpsons renderings from our buddy Horst, one of which shows a Simpsons-esque rendering of the outlaw Josie Wales. Man yells at chair. another headline of Grandpa Simpson, old man yells at chair. I sat here watching it. Kind of stunned. Largely disbelieving. Mostly just, huh? What? They really let a man hem and haw on stage and argue with a chair. So much for halftime in America, right? Amazing. But they're gone. The sex workers are trying to heal. But they're not forgotten. One of those delegates who had gone down to take back our country was an individual by the name of Mark Harris, and he took his spouse with him down to Florida, down to Tampa, and they made a side trip over to Epcot there at the Disney World. And while at Epcot at the Disney World, they paid a visit to the American Pavilion, you know, named after, guessing here, America. And it was there at the American Pavilion that Mark Harris and Mrs. Harris became very offended. They got so offended that they done went and blogviated about it. Prior to National Republican Convention, we visited Disney for 3 days. During our time at Epcot, we visited the different countries. It was neat seeing each country. Mr. Harris, you were still at Epcot. You weren't in any other countries. You were at Disney's idea of being in another country. I just want to clear that up. Then we visited America. One would think you would find American employees. We were offended because, you know, Republicans are just so good at being offended. You know, you follow your bliss, right? You do what you're good at, and Republicans are good at being offended. We were offended to find a person from Mexico working in America. This is Mrs. Harris writing. Mark spoke up and told them he was highly offended after visiting the other countries and seeing employees from that country, and then come to America and find a Mexican? He was very civil, but his point was well made. Shh. Don't tell them the name of the continent. Because it is. It's the name of the continent, not the name of the country. This here being, of course, the United States of America. I guess you could kind of say that our neighbor to the north is the Canada of America. Or Mexico of America to the south. But they're all Americans. In fact, if you want to do the whole genetic makeup thing, it is probably a greater likelihood that there are more people with more genetic material from original Americans in Mexico than there are in the United States. But again, for all we know, he was one of the goobers that booed the Puerto Rican delegate for got that whole USA, USA, USA chant going. Highly offended to find a Mexican working in America at the Epcot. Because them was real Italians there at the Epcot Italy, and real Japanese there at the Epcot Japan. We know it because they looked and sounded like it. We're just hoping to hear a little chorus or two of "It's a Small World After All," and we found out it's a Mexican world after all. Mexicans in America. See, that's it. That's that liberalism for you, thinking that there's America outside the United States. We're America. That's what we are. Dear God. You do. Highly offended to find out there's a Mexican working in America at Epcot. Then again, last night, Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, spoke some of that Mexican right up there on the podium, and I was surprised they didn't even boo him. Yeah, see, this isn't playing very well with Dr. John either. And then wait, he writes. She thinks Epcot imports nationals? How much you want to bet this goober thinks all Asians are Chinese, all Latinos are Mexicans, and all Pacific Islanders are Filipinos? Filipinos? You mean they're not Hawaiians? You know, like that Kenyan Muslim pretends to be that's in our White House? That's how it is with Disney. They will bring you real Europeans for Epcot Europe. And bring you real Africans. But we didn't want to go over to that Africa pavilion because, Africa is just too big and dark a country for us. Couldn't hardly understand a word they were saying, right? It's enough to make you sort of want to run and hide. But I'm just so damn glad it's over. From peanut-throwing racists. And, the lady at whom the nuts got thrown was beautifully eloquent. And most admirable in the way that she responded to having had repig-licking racists abuse, verbally accost her. The woman was Patricia Carroll, a camera operator for CNN. A lot of people tried to get her to talk about it. She said she didn't have much interest in going back over that ground all over again. In an effort to remain employed by CNN, she said, "This situation could happen to me at the Democratic Convention or standing on the street corner. Racism is a global issue." And I suppose it's possible it could happen at the Democratic Convention, but I'm guessing no. But she wants to keep her job, so she had to equivocate. Carol, 34, said that as an Alabama native, ding, 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 yeah, she's from Alabamistan, she wasn't surprised by having racists throw nuts at her and scream, "This is how we feed the animals." Because, see, she wasn't up operating her camera. She was on break or something, or she was down, but she was down from her camera stand and was just standing there. And you know how it is with dark-skinned people just standing around. Ain't never up to no good. That's called loitering, And that's why they throwed the nuts at her. She said, "This is Florida, and I'm from the Deep South. You come to places like this, you can count the black people on your hand. They see us doing things They see us doing things they don't think I should do, like be a camera operator. She said of the Repiglick and Clavering, there just are not that many black women there. She went on and said, I can't change these people's hearts and minds. No, it doesn't feel good, but I know who I am. I'm a proud black woman. A lot of black people are upset. This should be a wake-up call to black people. People were living in euphoria for a while. People think we're gonna. People think we've gone further than we have. And that's the damn truth. Case in point, a billboard in Massachusetts. It's one of three billboards on the property of a motorcycle accessory shop owned by one Robert Sullivan. Shows a pretty little white blonde girl, maybe 8 years old. Great big billboard. It says, thanks, Obama. You spent my lunch money. I'm rednecking her, and she's up in Massachusetts. Thanks, Obama. You spent my lunch money, my allowance, my inheritance, 35 years of future paychecks, and my retirement. You jerk! Vote Mitt Romney for 2012. Oh, did I add that the cute little white girl is holding up her extended middle finger? Where was that billboard when two illegal wars were being run up on the national credit card without so much as even a declaration of war by the Congress? Where was it? Well, it wasn't there. Because it's okay when white presidents in our White House plunder the national treasury. Because that's the way it's supposed to be. After all, as one L. Michelle Bachman noted, Barack Obama has extreme wealth and can't get in touch with ordinary people. Where's the tequila bottle? Damn it, I'm out. Jim noting, I have never seen such a collection of bad plastic surgery when they shot close-ups of some of the hardest-looking women ever, especially Ballistic Gingrich. Dr. John says, I call BS on that from the CNN worker, though I understand her position. Fact is, it didn't happen at the DNC. It happened at the RNC, Dr. John says. I tell my students something similar about American slavery. It didn't have to become racialized, but it was. And it happened because of the same damned one percenters. No kidding. In 1860, only about 1% of whites owned slaves. Planters were literally the 1%. Not really hard to get your head around. But I have to admit that having actually sat down and watched some of this disgusting the swill being pumped through TV monitors at me, I myself, even at a distance, even as attenuated from it as I was, I myself feel dirty, alone. Like I don't know. I just want to go somewhere quiet and not see any cranky white people for a while. What was it with the idiots wearing their cowboy hats in the building? Now, y'all know I'm a college football fan, and y'all know that I was raised in Alabama, and that makes me an Alabama fan, no accounting for the Auburn fan. The late, great Bear Bryant, Paul Bear Bryant, legendary coach of the Crimson Tide, was always to be seen on Saturday game day pacing the sidelines in a jacket and a houndstooth hat. It was surprising then, one year, I think it was the year that Alabama played Penn State in that memorable Sugar Bowl. What was that, 1979? When the Bear showed up on the sidelines, bareheaded. Ha ha. Ha ha ha. Wordplay. No hat. And so immediately, Keith Jackson or some other member of the broadcast crew had to say, Bear, where's your hat? And Coach Bryant responded,
back in Fordyce, Arkansas, Mama always told me not to wear a hat in the house. It's a mighty big house, but it's a house that's got a roof on it, and I ain't wearing no hat. Mama wouldn't approve, or some such.
So don't wear a hat in the house. Again, from the family values crowd, the ones that have real manners, not like us filthy right-wing or filthy left-wing progressive anti-colonialist Muslim-supporting hippie people. They got real manners, but they didn't have enough manners to take off their stupid cowboy hats in the house. Bless her heart, my mama would have gone and said, you people take your hats off. Weren't you raised right? What are you thinking? But there they were, yee-haw, with the cowboy hats in the house. Jesus. Bunch of Philistines. There I go, being rough on the Philistines again. Well, it's 19 minutes before the hour, and it's Friday on the front porch, and I really ought not. I've filibustered to my heart's content all week long. And so now, it's your turn. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, if it makes it easier to remember that way. Oh, yeah, okay. Dr. John saying, that's the Texas delegation and their Freedom Stetsons. The hats, no doubt, made in China. Marty observing that he thinks Bum Phillips said the same thing when he was the coach of the Houston Oilers and they'd play in the Astrodome. Mama said, don't wear your hat in the house. So light up the phones. Some folks have gotten short shrift in the way of conversation in the past few days, and I would like to give you an opportunity to get longer shrift? Hell, I don't know. But if you get in line early, your shrift is bound to be better than it is if you're in line at 4 minutes before the program's closed. So we'll take a little break, play a little song, and come back to your calls, your thoughts, your ponderances, here on this Friday on the front porch. Come on up, pull up a chair, get an ice cold glass of lemonade, sweet tea, mix it half and half, whatever suits you. Well, if you want to, reach over to that earthenware jug over there and get you with the corn cob stopper in it and get you a big long pull of 140 proof. If that won't cool you off in the heat, nothing will, because it will. Sure, God made little green apples make you sweat. Conversation radio is what we do here, because we hear, we're the horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
I keep hearing you're concerned about my happiness, but all that thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry enough. You and your friends are worried about me. I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall. That don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes.
nothing to do. Last night I dressed in tails, pretending I was on the tail. Long as I can dream, it's hard to slow the swingers down. Please don't give a thought to me, I'm really doing fine. You can always find me here and having quite a time. Count some flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you, I must go, I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are not accustomed to this light. And my shoes are not accustomed to this hard concrete. I must go back to my room and make my day complete. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. Don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Leftover bumper music from the Ann Romney Real Marriage Night. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the front porch, and it looks like we've got a good cast of conversationalists. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in, though. 877-443-2366. If you don't need us to carry the toll-free freight, you can always choose 304-658-3333. And to the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ian Ryan's special superhero ability is the perpetual smile frown.
The perpetual smile frown, David, right.
Yes, I had to steal that one because that's what a lot of people are saying that Paul Ryan is doing. So, and David Benner gave us a good reminder to use the term Lion Ryan constantly.
Well, you know, there's another term. I'm glad you mentioned that, David, because there's another term I want us to get out there because this is a truly historic election. you know, we've done a pretty good job of, at least around here, of getting folks of to thinking about Willard Romney as being Willard, which is what his real name is. But there's another, I think, now that he is the nominee for president, there's another name we have to use. And I mean this in all sincerity, David.
Yeah.
Bishop Romney.
Oh, yeah, I checked your Twitter, and when you said that, I was like, yeah, that's good, Bishop Romney.
I think, because, you know what, if somebody has an honorific like that, aren't you supposed to use it?
You are. He has that title. He has that theological title.
I mean, don't you think there's some value in that? The man was a faithful servant of his church, and he was elevated to the position of being a prince of his church. He is a bishop in his church. Therefore, he should be referred to as Bishop Romney, because it's not like an American political party just nominates a bishop every 4 years. Okay, I checked my history, and I can't find where any political party has ever nominated a bishop, a prince of the church, as their nominee before. This is a special moment in history.
It is. And since people are dying to see Barack's birth certificate and his Kenyan angry roots, I demand to see Mitt Romney's spaceship that he's going to go
to. Bishop Romney's. Yes,
oh, Bishop Romney.
Right. You know, I'll bet you don't have to. No, they
Bishop
don't have
Mitt,
to.
Bishop Willard.
They don't. Yeah, Bishop Willard Romney. They don't have to show us the spaceship. You're asking a little much there, David. But you know what? The blueprints would be okay.
Yeah, the blueprints would be okay. Wow, what a spectacle of a train wreck. So much idiocracy. So much. And I think it really did a disservice to... And Clint Eastwood did a disservice to himself as well, aligning himself with such con men, such hucksters. And it does show you the level of disrespect that the Republican Party have for Clint Eastwood, because you can tell just by listening to him that he should be sitting down and enjoying his retirement.
But you're the one that told you he's got a movie coming out.
I know that. Someone said that. Oh, wait. I love this. I love this response. You said, I have to say that the trailer to Gran Torino 2 was awful. And for people who don't get the joke, he played a vile, vile racist in the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at someone like Clint Eastwood, and obviously, you know what he was doing, though, Bob? This is a line for the night for me, for anything to do with Romney and Clint. This is going to be the last one. He was basically saying, Romney asked him to play MIDI for me.
Oh, you're full of it tonight, David.
Yeah.
You got a million. You'll be here the rest of the night. Don't forget to tip your
reason. But the reason why I called to talk about the convention was you brought up the other night, and I just stumbled on this just on coincidence, Bob, because of what you brought up. So this is all your fault.
Of course it is.
This is all your fault that I found this. You have to take personal responsibility.
I do.
All right. So you brought up Jeanine Turner.
Yes.
And I was wondering, okay, I know this woman is a talk show host now, and I know I just wanted to see on YouTube what she had for speeches.
Are you about to tell me that she's a founding member of the I Got Nothing Institute?
Well, how about this, Bob? She's already working on her daughter, and her daughter has a, say it with me, people, a book coming out.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a reality series.
Well, that would be good too. And when you play this,
maybe
book,
Honey Boo Boo 2.
It's even worse than that, Bob, because it is really what I would describe as the cultural apocalypse that we are currently experiencing right now, that's full tilt right now. The book that she has coming out is called, and this is the daughter of Jeanine Turner, who I think is something like 17 or 18, I'm not sure exactly on the age, but it still is very troubling. Her book is called Our Constitution Rocks.
Yeah, that's what it does. It rocks.
Now, Bob,
It doesn't set up a form of government.
To torture you even further, though, Bob, I found on YouTube where she does a tease for the book.
Oh, shall we run the tease?
Yes, you shall. And it's not an Onion commercial, people. It's not Funny or Die. It's real.
Oh, God.
And you can stop it.
Hi, I'm Juliette Turner. I've written a book on the United States Constitution. Okay, I know what you're thinking. The Constitution? That's just some old document written by a bunch of guys who wore tights and wigs over 200 years ago. That has nothing to do with my life.
Wait, tights? Tights?
Yeah.
Does she know something I don't know? It's
awesome, Bob.
Tights and doublets had kind of gone out a couple of hundred years before.
Don't interrupt the radness.
Oh, okay. Wait. Now she's a redhead.
Yeah.
Has she dyed her hair from blonde?
I don't know. Here's the scary thing.
I'm being catty. I'm sorry.
The video that you're watching, you know what's hilarious about it? It's just one thing after the other. Like, the YouTube channel's called Jeanine Turner, Actress. And then
Jeanine Turner, out of work actress. Jeanine Turner had one good role in her life.
She's behind the camera and she's coaching, as you'll see later on.
Spirit fingers, Juliet, spirit fingers.
Jazz hands.
There you go.
So.
Oh, Jesus, we'll go back to it.
Yeah.
You're telling me it gets better?
It gets much better, Bob.
But it does. That's why I've written a book called Our Constitution Rocks. Our Constitution Rocks. The Constitution is America's roadmap, our guide. Would you get in a car if you had no earthly idea how to work the gas and the brakes? No. That's why we, as the future generation of America, the future torchbearers, we need to understand how our government works. That's why I've written this book called Our Constitution Rocks. Our Constitution Rocks. Our Constitution Rocks. But not only that, the Constitution protects every aspect of our everyday lives.
Every?
I know what you're thinking. Yeah, right.
it protects the rights of everybody who loves each other to be able to get married. Does it protect that?
I just typed in our Constitution strolls and it can't come up on Amazon. I think that's what it's called because I didn't hear it enough times what she was saying.
Our Constitution. What now? What's the name of the book, David? Our Constitution Boogie Woogies?
Maybe that's it. I'll try that. I'll try that and see if that works.
Our Constitution, really the Bee's that. Knees?
I want to pre-order this book right now in a hurry.
Our Hepcat Constitution?
Our Constitution Dubsteps?
Our Constitution Pilates?
Our Constitution Calypsos?
What if Mark Zuckerberg...
Is there a rattlesnake in the background? Did you hear that? I think... Look out, honey!
That might be Jeanine shaking her Constitution bracelet at her or something.
Oh, okay.
...was persecuted for creating Facebook. What if you and your parents could be in prison for twittering your thoughts? What if the government could come in on a Sunday morning while you're in church and arrest the preacher? What would it be like with no freedom of speech? What protects our rights? The Constitution in Articles 1, 2, and 3.
Wait, how old is she?
I don't know, Bob, but did you catch that? In case people didn't hear that, arrest the preacher.
Yes.
This is the underlying theme.
Right, well, that's what's going to happen, David, because you see, that Obama, that Kenyan national, Kenyan... Yeah. And Muslim anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. That's what his hate crimes and Agenda 21 is all about, being able to arrest the preachers for speaking truth about the abomination, the Oh, the Obama nation of homosexuality.
It's the most important freedom, Bob. Freedom of hucksterism.
Freedom of hate.
Freedom of hate as well, too. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, we can't stop here, Dave.
No, you can't.
The separation of powers, the checks and balances. Without Article 1, 2, and 3, one branch could overpower the other. The president could overpower the Congress. Or the Congress could overpower the judicial branch.
With his Barack Obama socialism raise. Right?
Yeah.
And our liberties would, poof, go away. This is our Constitution. Little book, just a few pages. This year is its 225th anniversary. Happy birthday. Now, just in case you get confused on all those shalls and shall nots, I wrote a book and I...
Because, you know, verbs like shall and negatives like not, I struggled with them when I was her age. Really, I did.
It's like such a bummer if you don't have the Constitution nearby.
Dude. Oh, well, I'm just geezering right up here, aren't I?
It is not fetch, Bob. It is not
Hey, will you stop trying to make fetch catch on, David? It is so not catching on.
Oh, it has no swag whatsoever.
None.
Jesus. Our generation's language. I broke the Constitution down into cool categories, such as, what has it done for me lately? Why should I care? How can I make a difference? Breaking it down in the bottom line. And... what were they thinking? It's great for all ages, including your parents. Take, for example, Article 1, Section 9, Clauses 2 through 3. The bottom line states that the right of habeas corpus cannot be denied to anyone unless they're part of a rebellion.
So that means that Kenyan anti-colonialist Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people will have to tear the Constitution. He'll have to put his foot on it, like in that famous painting where James Madison's going, but what are you, little short feller, and what are you doing? And he's holding his hands out at him.
Don't arrest the blood-red carpet preacher, man. Don't arrest him. That's the most important thing we take away from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, Jesus criminy. It only gets worse, doesn't it?
Yeah, it gets worse.
Are we done?
I think it's almost done. The ending is... I think people have been tortured enough to tell you that.
Okay, I was going to say, does it have an ending that will leave people talking until the next...
No, I mean, the ending just literally... you hear, like, they decided to put on a blooper reel, and you hear Jeanine Turner coaching her daughter, now put the book up higher. Yeah. It's like, they actually thought that this was great. To put
twinkle, twinkle, you've got a sparkle.
Yeah, right. And see, the scary thing about this is...
You'll never get a role on a quirky, short-lived CBS sitcom if you don't sparkle.
That's right. And if anyone's ever listened to her her show, she's like...
which we haven't.
A dainty Michael Savage or something.
You could have used any word but dainty, and I would have been okay.
Well, you know, judging Michael Savage's background, because he did have a pool party with Allen Ginsberg, and I'm not the one to judge, but I think it should be out there for this romance, this true romance should be out there for people to...
Well, I want you to know that you've caused a real problem for Dr. John, David.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's
sure.
Not every day that, I mean, usually the subject lines on Dr. Yeah. John's emails are, you know, full sentences and stuff. You know, he's one of those word guys.
Yeah.
But no. What the is this? And you just get the WTF. That's all you get. And
yeah.
Dr. John says, I struggled with slightly complex English, too. Then I stopped being eight. Jesus.
But John, it's just for letting people know that it rocks. Don't you understand? It rocks.
It does. It rocks. I mean, it's not like all emo and stuff. It rocks.
I think we know where that book is going to be promoted if right-wingers are alerted.
Dollar Tree? Dollar General?
Oh, Bill O'Reilly? And Bill O'Reilly's not going to have her on because she's a quote-unquote good author. Let's get that straight.
No, oh, Jesus. you're not suggesting that Bill O'Reilly takes the falafel to work with him every day, are you?
Well, I'm suggesting that there is a bit of favoritism regarding female conservative authors, and there seems to be a certain trait that comes back over and over and over again.
Why do you do these things to me, David?
Now, if people really want to see, like...
It's been a hard week, okay?
Now, it doesn't top the Clint Eastwood speech, but if you get a chance, look at clips of Jeanine Turner just talking to the crowd. She does that pointing thing over and over again. Hey, I see you over there, Texas. I see you over there, Alabama. Way too much.
South Carolina's in the house.
Yeah,
representing.
Like, that times 100, though, Bob. That times 100. And just smiling all the time. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, over there.
She knows how to sparkle.
Yes, exactly. She knows how to sparkle. So, yeah, that to me, but the thing that should be concerning is the fact that, well, this girl probably isn't even out of high school yet.
No, but high school has apparently done absolutely nothing for her whatsoever. Fritz in Arkansas noting, by the way, conserva books? I've seen a few on the end cap at the local Fred's in town. Fred's being a southern... kind of Dollar General-esque, only they have a pharmacy and stuff with them.
Right.
Yeah, $1. Dollar a pound.
That's, yeah. You can sell a lot of books by that price.
I found some decent tomes there at Dollar General. I got the second I got the second installment, not the first, and the third is still being written. But I got the second installment of Peter O'Toole's autobiography for $1 at Dollar General one time, one of the better purchases I've made.
Well, that's good.
But mostly it's things like, why Hillary Clinton is a she-devil in pants.
Yeah, it's a wild world in which we are traversing. The other example of a cultural apocalypse that
Now, we've already covered Honey Boo Boo Child.
Yeah, it's not Honey Boo Boo Child. It was just something that I noticed that was really
Although
really
I am
odd.
Mighty proud that she beat out the Republican National Convention.
They have, how can I say this? They have, like, unboxing of reptile videos and pythons. And I just watched it because I wanted to see, okay, how do you ship a reptile? Now, how do you ship a boa constrictor or a baby python or whatever it was that they had ordered online?
Caimans, alligators.
It was eye-opening, to say the least, because I would think, you know, that it would be all frills aside, the air conditioner valves put inside, but no, it's pretty much they just put them in a bag and.
Well, you know what? You didn't do any favors for Jim neither, David.
Uh oh.
Oh my God! I've heard more intelligent stuff from the Hilton sisters.
Well, Jim, but Jim's missing the overall arching theme to the whole book. Because
the Constitution rocks.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's exactly the point about this whole evening. If you can't remember anything else, you should be able to remember that our Constitution does not stroll. It does not dubstep. It does not swing.
It doesn't Zumba.
It doesn't crip walk. Our Constitution definitely does not crip walk.
It rocks.
It rocks, yeah.
As long as it's not punk. No.
Right.
Right.
And so, oh, but the other thing I wanted to mention was, did you get a chance to take a look at the the Aqua Teen Something Whatever episode?
Yes, I did.
You know, that Jet Chicken guy reminds me so much of what we have to deal every year with the Republican Party.
I think it was deliberate. I think you were supposed to feel that way.
when he goes in the outhouse, that's literally what I think of what the GOP is doing in this country.
Yeah.
And then he has the nerve to say, please help me out of here. Don't forget to clean up the mess.
Y'all.
Y'all, right.
Y'all clean up the mess.
I'm
out of here.
Yeah, it's It's troubling to see how much credibility we still give to any of the Republicans. And my favorite phrase of the week is, and I heard it in an interview, and it was, you know, you got the playing politics, but the... That's also uses two P's. I guess they like using the P words over and over again, but the other one is purely politics. You know, this is just purely politics.
Right.
And what's funny about that is if you're a politician and you're involving yourself in political acts, it's obviously going to be what? Purely politics. But you see,
yeah, it's not like that synthetic blend politics or anything.
This is why they're the master of the memes, because they put this out there.
Blame game.
Yeah. You know what's funny was that I was listening to...
Out of context.
Right. I was listening to Alan Combs. And Alan Combs had a caller, and they were calling on they were talking about the political debate. And it was and Alan was giving an interesting take on the debate. It was, I would say it was pretty fair. And he was really critical on what they were saying. But the most interesting thing about to me that I took away from it was that he had a caller call in, one of those longtime callers, who was a Republican caller. And he said, and he just addressed him, he said, but that isn't exactly what Paul Ryan said. That isn't it at all. And so the caller took that away, he's like, yeah, but, well, Paul Ryan may be lying, but we're gonna see this November. You got some trouble ahead of you. That was the main point. That literally the spectacle, that's what mattered the most. The lying.
Yeah, not so much.
The distortion. No.
You know, we don't expect them to tell the truth.
But we're going to beat your ass, son. We're going to beat your ass. That's the most important thing.
We're going to win. Winning!
That's, right. So.
Tiger blood.
And did you catch the Michael Moore thing where he did an interview with the Huffington Post?
No.
That was kind of interesting. Because Michael Moore was saying, to take the Republicans, what we say all the time, to take them a bit more seriously and don't just laugh them off in terms of their message and how fast their messaging machine comes across and how much money they're spending and how much they just drive it into the wall constantly and the generating of all that propaganda and what we have to go through eventually just to get anywhere, any kind of clearance, so the audience can just take a breather for a minute with all this propaganda and say, you know, guys, this is all BS, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what I've noticed on Twitter and a lot of blogs and stuff is that all of these little messages that they put out there, that to me is what concerns me. When all those little tiny messages, and you have Democrats who still don't understand that it has nothing to do with the fact that they're lying. It's the constant repetition that they're doing, and how fast they're speeding it out right now.
Like the speed of light, and that's why
right. That's why
I think it's at least moderately important, David, that we take. Because I mean, I'm not kidding. I wasn't being a smartass. I think it is important that we note that we have a prince of the church running for the presidency. It is not because that meme has been advanced. That, well, you know, people are talking. People don't. They're concerned about Mormon religion because we never had a Mormon president. But you know, that's just like John Kennedy. People were afraid he was going to give the government away to the papacy in Rome and we'd all be Catholic.
Yeah.
No, that's BS. Because John Kennedy was not a bishop. Okay? I mean, all kidding aside, we need to take Bishop Romney and wear it out.
Bishop Romney.
Willard Romney.
Now, when he wears the hat, the symbol of it is going to be the dollar sign, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if he gets the hat and shoes. But
it would mess up his hair.
Well, I mean, he's got the underwear.
That's true. He has the underwear.
But hats are probably involved because knowing that a whole bunch... Are you familiar with something called the Mormon penalty oath?
I don't think I am familiar with this.
Because I've heard a lot of people talking about the white horse prophecy.
Mm.
When the Constitution hangs by a thread, the Mormon Church will answer a great white horse, blah 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 blah, and the Mormon Church will answer the call and save the Constitution, right?
Right.
A lot of people know about that so-called white horse prophecy. They don't know so much about the so-called penalty oath. And it has been since deleted from or eliminated from the so-called endowment of Mormonism. The endowment ceremony is literally a lot like Masonic Lodge practice. Okay,
right.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
because the penalty oath itself is taken almost verbatim from the oath of an entered apprentice Mason. Let's see. Here we go. I've got it here. Joseph Smith Jr. instituted the endowment ritual in Nauvoo, Illinois. At three different stages of the endowment, participants have to take an oath of secrecy regarding the gestures of the ceremony. You know, where you pinch to zoom it in, or you move your finger. Gestures, right. Sorry, that's 21st century joke.
Right.
The oath takers had to promise as follows. And remember, this thing was only eliminated from the ceremony in 1990. So at some point in time, Bishop Willard Romney has sworn this oath. They had to say that if they were ever to reveal the secret sacred gestures of the endowment ceremony, that they would be subject to having my throat be cut from ear to ear and my tongue torn out by its roots, our breasts be torn open, our hearts and vitals torn out and given to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, our body be cut asunder, and all your bowels gush out. And then they had to make little signs like cutting their own throats and their guts coming out and stuff like that.
This would make a good graphic novel right here.
I love the way your mind works.
Frank Miller calling Frank Miller.
Hi, Frank.
Yeah. You are needed. Your expertise is needed because you seem to have a lot of hate in your heart. Commence the blood.
But, I mean, all kidding aside, he is a bishop of the church, and he has sworn this oath. And there are some fundamentalist sects. The idea that there can be a fundamentalist sect of Mormonism is sort of, I don't know, it's like atoms being composed of even smaller atoms.
Right.
But he's done this. And wouldn't the American people like to know this? Or do we just not give an F?
Well, see, Bob, here's the issue. Because he's not a Democrat, and because he's not, African-American or black or any of the persuasion that has no paleness, people just aren't interested, but that's all just a coincidence.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, that whole business about throats being, that's pretty gory stuff.
Yeah.
But that business about throats being cut put me in mind of something. Can I share it real quick?
Yeah, go. Please do.
Oh, wait, it's the wrong damn one. Pisses me off when that happens. I hate it when people cover stuff and it doesn't say
cover. Are you watching soap operas again, Bob?
Oh, stop it. let's see. Let's try this one, then.
The Tale of Sir Robin. So each of the knights went their separate ways. Sir Robin rode north through the dark forest of Ewing, accompanied by his favorite minstrels.
Bravely bold Sir Robin rode forth from Camelot. He was not afraid to die, oh brave Sir Robin. He was not at all afraid to be killed in nasty ways.
Pray, 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 Sir Robin. He was not in the least bit scared to be mashed into a pulp, or to have his eyes gouged out and his elbows broken, to have his kneecap split and his body burned away, and his limbs all hacked and mangled, pray, Sir Robin. His head smashed in and his heart cut out and his liver removed and his bowels unplugged and his nostrils raked and his bottom burnt off and his...
That's enough music for now, lads.
Yeah, that's enough music for now. But that litany of, and his nostrils raped, that was the first thing I thought of when I read about the Mormon death penalty oath.
You know, it's interesting that we can't even have that kind of, nobody will put that on the, any kind of mockery or satire like that on the air for someone like Romney. It's almost like intentionally staying away from it. But one of the things that I found interesting since you brought up Monty Python is the fact that there was a special recently, I'll try to find it for you, it's a behind the scenes type thing of history, recent history on the Monty Python throughout the different decades. And one of the interesting things they said was that the BBC really did not approve of a lot of what Monty Python was doing. And one of the tactics they did was they would constantly move the time schedule around.
Just trying to kill it off, yeah.
Right, just trying to kill it off. And it's interesting because of how much tolerance we have for some other things and how much tolerance we don't have. When the truth is really, it's really a searing thing, Bob. And, you know, I think for a lot of people concerning, I don't know if you know, I don't know too many, personally, I don't know too many Mormons. I may have come across a few people who are Mormons. I don't know. I definitely know more of the Christian persuasion and evangelical. That's definitely come into my life a few times, more often than once. Bob, I've mentioned this before. My dad just ends up kicking him out.
Time for you to go now.
Yeah, basically.
This is the part where you leave.
Do you know where a hotel is? Because you're going to one.
Just down the street. There are two lefts on a right. You're there.
So I guess what I'm asking is when you come across someone who has a family of people who are basically indoctrinated at birth and so forth, whether it's a Mormon or a Christian or so forth, and how do you handle that as your...
Well, generally, I mind my own business.
Yeah.
I mean, they've shown up on their porch with their little bicycles and stuff, and I've said in the past, I've been nice to them as long as they're nice to me, because... It's my understanding from reading about the Mormon mission, unless you're Bishop Romney and got to live in a freaking palace in France,
yeah,
that it's a pretty crappy undertaking. Nobody ever gets converted. A lot of people are mean to you. So me, non-theist that I am, certainly not a Christian, I try to be decent to them. You want a glass of lemonade? Is it hot? I mean, I promise. You know, there's no stimulants in it or anything. Milk, you know.
And when they try to lecture to you above their...
they never get to the lecture part.
Oh, that's good.
Because, and I advise everybody, once you know about this stuff, what you do is you say, tell me about the endowment ceremony. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't do that. Tell me about the penalty oath. Well, that we haven't done that since 1990. No, but what was it? Oh, we can't tell you. Well, tell me about Planet Kolob. And pretty soon they figure out that you're in on that you know their hustle as well or better than they do.
Right.
Tell me about the how the Indians are descended from Jews. Yeah, thanks for the lemonade, Mr. Kincaid. God bless you now. Tenth gear. You know, and they pedal away.
Throw the third switch.
Right.
I want
it to be understood very, very plainly. I'm not mocking them.
Yeah.
I'm not making sport of them. But I have read their book. I don't think that you can fairly criticize a religion unless you've read its texts. And I've read their book. You know, it's like that scene from Patton with George C. Scott standing there among the smoking ruins of the Battle of whatever it was, and he had just gotten there and he didn't get to participate in it, and he's standing there and he, Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book! Right?
Right.
I've read their book. I know the tactics. I've read the Bible. I've read the Quran. I've read the Book of Mormon. I've read the Bhagavad Gita, the Rig Veda. I've read the Diamond Sutra. I've done this stuff because I'm fascinated by it. Some of it I'm fascinated by the way you're fascinated by really dangerous animals behind bars in a zoo.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by it. And so, you know, I'm not prone to being bullshitted by them. Bullshat? Who knows? But, you know, I don't blow through their, you dumbass. No. Hi, fellas. You know, be as meek as lambs. And really? You've got another testament of Jesus Christ? That's great. Because, you know, we've only got three in the Bible, and there's one that they didn't publish, but you've got another one? Wow, that's thick. Tell me about the endowment. Tell me about the penalty oath. Tell me about the underwear. Tell me about baptizing the dead people. By the way, fellas, why was it that when she died, Stanley Ann Dunham, the mother of the President of the United States, why did your church death baptize her? Because you know, David, they did.
Mm.
They baptized Barack Obama's mama after her death. Her horrible, horrible, horrible death from cancer. They baptized her in death so that she would be separated from her son for all eternity. You know, after all, he's dark-skinned, she was white. It's probably better.
Yeah, it's definitely better.
But I'm very serious. I want everybody, please tell me that you know, the Republican nominee for the presidential election of 2012 is Bishop Willard Romney. Because he may not be governor of Massachusetts anymore, but he is still a bishop, a prince of their church. And that's never happened in America before. In America, we have generally had better sense than to do that. You know, see, Sunday school teacher is not a formal title. Jimmy Carter was a Sunday school teacher. But you don't call him Sunday school teacher Carter.
You call him Communist Carter.
Well, sissy, lily-livered, pansy, liberal...
Peanut Carter.
Yeah, peanut. Well, they called him the peanut farmer. Peanut farmer. Well, you know what? If they can talk about Jimmy Carter being a peanut... Oh, that Barack Obama, what's he ever done with his life? Oh, he is a community organizer. And that rinse penis or what? That Republican National Committee guy. He's never even run a lemonade stand. Right?
Yeah.
Well, then, can we not, with reverence, refer to the Republican nominee for president in 2012 as Bishop Willard Romney? Oh, no, you have to call him governor. Well, he's not governor anymore. But he is still a bishop. So can we do that, David?
We can, Bob, but then we'll get the title of the Democrats will call us and say both sides can't be doing this.
Well, both sides aren't running a bishop for president now, are they?
I know. And it's definitely a quandary to be put in because... you know, so many people are so afraid of actually saying the truth about a Republican. And it's getting, and to me, it's gotten even worse with the concentration of media that we currently have now in the cable world and even on the primetime channels. People are so afraid, so deathly afraid, that it's almost like the reaction, it's almost like they're reacting. It's a reflex. It's a spousal abuse, that type of reaction.
Yeah, it is. It is. Hey, David, I'm going to roll, but it's been a great conversation.
All right, Bob.
Holy cow.
Great talking to you.
I'm all set for the weekend now.
Okay,
later.
Good.
Bye now. Bye. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And just a couple of things to throw out there. I've been getting some responses via email over the course of the evening. It looks like there will be a live show on Monday evening, Labor Day evening. But y'all got to show up, and you got to tell your friends, because there isn't going to be any other liberal radio live that I know of, or progressive, or whatever it is we do here. So you got to tell everybody, hey, you know, you didn't get your fix today. Well, Bob's live. Can y'all do that? No, Ron, I didn't. Ron and Raleigh. You people. Bob, did you read it in the original Reformed Egyptian? I always ask them about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Well, there is that, too. Yeah, go read up on it. I don't have the heart to tell you. No, I didn't read it in the original Reformed Egyptian, Ron, because I did not have my seeing stones or my hat. Maybe they give you those when you become a bishop or a prophet or an exalted noble pishposh or whatever the hell it is. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
What do you say, Kevin?
Oh, not much. I had to call you. I had a experience yesterday that was kind of interesting to me, and it just shows how this 1% crowd has done us. A friend of mine had some checks from Bank of America. They were over 3 months old, so she had to go to a Bank of America branch to cash them. I have a really good 1-800 service that is free to the disabled. And so I said, yeah, I'll look that up here in Colorado Springs. They gave me one bank. I call the bank up. I get this Cisco Unity messaging system. Doesn't say a word about Bank of America. So when I get on something like that, I got to finish it. So I finally called and asked the operator, the live operator, look up the toll-free and see if you have a national number for Bank of America. They did, but I couldn't get a live operator there. I had to keep pressing zero. Must have been about 3 minutes worth of pressing zero before I finally got a live operator. And this live operator looked it up and said she couldn't find a Bank of America branch in Colorado Springs. And in fact, she couldn't even find one in Denver. And I'm thinking, well, I know my director of assistance thing said there was one on this boulevard here, the street. But I couldn't get a hold of them. And the woman had a little bit of an accent, so I finally decided. I said, you know, I couldn't get a hold of anybody, and you're telling me you can't find a branch anywhere really in Colorado. Where are you at anyway? Costa Rica. But it was so annoying. There's a commercial out, one bank, and I can't think who does it, but mimics the fact that you don't get a live operator, and I've never encountered that to that extent.
This is Peggy. Right.
And yeah. it just blew me away that this is what's happened to America. Couldn't even get anybody but this live operator in Costa Rica, and she didn't know anything about any Bank of America's in Colorado. You know, man, I was just...
Welcome to the impersonal 21st century.
Well, yeah, and you know...
But you know what? If they need to talk to you, Kevin, they will not have any problem.
Sure. If you're late on your payment, you're going to get a call from someone. You know, but I've encountered a couple banks that it was hard to get a hold of someone, but I've never encountered a bank that I couldn't get a hold of anyone except an operator in Costa Rica. And it just, you know, I'll never bank at Bank of America, I can tell you that.
Because Do you want to give us money or get money from us? Press 1 for give us money. Press 2 right. for get money from us. Okay, so you press 2. Right.
So you call back and press 1, and you get an operator almost immediately.
In Costa Rica.
If you want to, yeah, in Costa Rica. But it's just...
That's to make sure you're not lying, you know, about wanting to give them money.
I thought about asking them if Word had any money down there, though, while I was on the line with them. You know, being Costa Rica and all, thought maybe the bishop might have some money down there.
See, that's great. That's great. See if the bishop had any money down there. That's what we got to go for, the bishop.
Yep. I really do. I agree with you. I think if...
And I hope on the day after the election we're talking about Barack Obama beating the bishop.
Yep. Yep. I hope so, too. I've had my criticisms of the president, but...
Me, too.
What?
Me too, but I'm a political grown-up, and I realize that, you know, I want a pony ain't on the ballot.
Well, after watching this Republican convention and some of the things they've done over the past few months, they've encouraged me to vote for President Obama, whereas maybe 6 months ago I was kind of, you know, in between whether I wanted to do that or not. No, right now I'm on board, because when you've got a grumpy old man talking to an empty chair at a national convention,
okay,
there's a problem.
Yeah, and I'm not making light of the way you have to deal with life, but you just said something kind of profound, Kevin. Because you know, you're a member of the Horn family, and we know that you are sight disabled, right?
Right.
So you couldn't see Clint talking to the empty chair, but it still sounded nuts to you.
Yeah, that
even without the visual. And I mean that as, you know, you've said something here that's profound. It wasn't just goofy to the excited among us, even to those who didn't have it. It was insane. And, you know, I mean, halfway through it, I was, you know, kind of, I've never experienced this during a Republican national convention before, Kevin. Halfway through it, I was feeling bad for like Clint's five women. I was feeling, because every one of them was going, oh, Dad. Mom.
Yep.
Okay, I understand, Mom. Oh, Dad, somebody get the blowgun out. You know, just get him off the stage. This is embarrassing.
It was, and that was supposed to be the lead-in to Romney's acceptance speech. You know, shouldn't that tell America something? Whether it will or not, I guess, is to be determined. But, wow, you know, that's it's like I think David described it as train wreck, and that's kind of like what it was. It was like you can't turn your eyes away from it. You want to, but it's so fascinatingly horrible, you know, that you just sit there in complete amazement that something like this was happening at a national convention of any kind, much less the Republican National Convention. And I did. I felt bad for Clint Eastwood, even.
Well, it went away real quick, Kevin. Real quick. You know, sitting there imagining that the President of the United States is swearing at him, that's not that far from the billboard with the 8-year-old giving him the middle finger.
Oh, yeah, and of course, you're the religious amongst us. If the atheists put up a sign somewhere that says there is no God, they're all over that. We can't have that sign up in our town. But we can have an 8-year-old girl giving the president a bird, you know.
Yeah.
That, no problem with that. So, I'm just, The other thing that happened that I wanted to kind of mention, my home health care worker, her sister was in a car accident yesterday. She wasn't in the car. She was actually out of standing by the car in a parking lot. And someone was texting while driving and hit her, breaking her leg in three places. And one of the breaks was a compound fracture. They took her into surgery and sent her home the same day. And I just was, you know, what has happened to just general common compassion? You know, you're talking about the full leg, which is painful as heck to break anyway. You get the compound fracture, you got to worry about the infection.
The bleeding to death, all kinds of stuff with compound fractures.
Yeah. Exactly. And sent her home the same day.
You'll be fine. Yeah. You got a little touch of the West Nile. You'll have a headache. Take two aspirin and don't call me in the morning. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear it, Kevin. I hope she's okay. Well, listen, you have a good weekend, and I'll be here Monday night. The votes are still coming in, but yeah, it looks like there'll be a Monday show. So hopefully we will talk soon.
Yep, I appreciate it, Bob, and I will talk to you Monday night, I bet.
I bet you. Take care, Kevin.
All right.
Bye now.
Sure.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. We go onward.
Hello.
Well, hey, Juanita.
Let's turn my other thing off.
That helps.
I just had a few things to say about the convention. I sent you an email about after I saw New Lolly. What's his name? Go ahead and make my day.
Oh, yeah, he's Clint.
Yeah.
We'll just call him Clint.
Anyway.
We'll just call him Grumpy Old Man.
I was watching MSNBC and Rachel, she was, they had one on that in particular time, is in her time area. And she was just looked stunned. She said, I've never, ever seen anything like that at a convention. She said, and I hope I never will again.
Yeah, didn't she say something like, if I live to be 100?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. She just was looked so, had such a stunned look on her face. And, the whole time he was doing it, it was very vulgar, the way he was doing it, and very disrespectful, and very stupid, and I'm not handing him over that for age. I'm handing it over for his, what they call, chutzpah, or whatever.
Well, no, his rudeness. That's not chutzpah,
yeah,
that's rudeness.
Yeah, chutzpah's nice, yeah.
Yeah, chutzpah is, can be a good
thing.
Yeah.
That made me think of, you were talking about the Gray book. What was the name of it?
Fifty Shades of Gray.
Yeah, I saw the other night, I hadn't seen her in a long time, Dr. Ruth, remember her?
Yeah.
She looked pretty good, you know. And she was recommended that married couples, if they were having problems, you know, to read that book.
Oh, God.
So that's kind of like the book, you know, it's kind of, only more so, I think. But anyhow, that's an aside. Another thing that about that, too, is, you know, if they do get in and want to do away with all these rules for the companies, then I think they should do away with all these rules for we the people, like I've been going through. And my son, you know, been working outside. He's gotten acquainted with different people, you know, stopping by and talking to him. And there's a lot of people out here in our little neighborhood has been having problems with the county. And you know...
Right, because the county can no longer... I mean, well, you live in a brutal state to begin with, and I mean that as no insult, Juanita.
No, that's not insulting to me. It's the truth.
And it's only going to get more so.
But But I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No. That's what I was going to say. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. But...
More and more people will have problems like what you've had.
Yeah, just the least little thing. You're trying to make yourself, you know, a little safer and a little better, you know. Because you can't... You know, people just don't have the money to just put up these fine fences or these this or that or the other and just get on to you about the least little thing and charge you money.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just on and on. I know we had this couple that were from Mexico. They got this vegetable stand, and the county was on them all the time. They were so strict with them and charging them money. And the thing is that the fees are so high. They're just too high for people. And, you know, you wouldn't even mind having some of the rules, but it's just a disgrace. And I think that, like I said, because how can we do anything right if what we have to buy to do the stuff with is not been inspected or has some kind of a safety measure, you know? And another thing I'll say about Zach Kevin about the Puerto Rican.
Well, go ahead.
He was talking about he couldn't get anybody here.
Oh, Costa Rican.
Costa Rica, yeah. Well, those jobs, you know, have been going overseas for a long time. And did you know that, I don't know if it stopped or not, but at one time, they were sending, if you applied for like for Medicaid or different things like that, your information was sent overseas for them to work it out. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
And those are things that people over here could do. I could do something like that at home.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not offered.
Well, no, because whatever you might do it for at home, Juanita, it will be done for a tenth of it by someone who is near to starving in India.
Yeah, but anyway, it's just everything is just for the bigwigs, you know. But we're so jealous. We shouldn't be jealous, should we? I'm so jealous.
I can tell you are positively green with envy and just plum eat up with it, Juanita.
Yeah, you know, it's like you were talking about, I think it was yesterday, you were talking about that all the money, like with somebody like Rush Limbaugh, you know, you go and you buy this and you buy that, and after a while it's...
And after a while you find out that your life is hollow.
That's it, exactly. Empty. It's like having a big old mansion and you hear the footsteps echoing in the hallway, you know, and it's just nothing there. Just dead. Death, death, death all around.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you go so you can get some more phone calls, and that's basically what I wanted to bring up was different things like that.
Okay, well, I appreciate all of it, and you have a lovely weekend, and we'll be here Monday night.
And I didn't even know that Monday was Labor Day. We got paid early, for goodness sake.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, they really needed it, too. Okay, well, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, good night, Juanita. Bye now. I'll tell you what we'll do. We will. Lines are opening up. We've got a couple of folks on hold. I hope you will. I hope you'll stay there. You know, like I've said before, everything reminds me of something, and I am most assuredly a child of the television generation, such that. You know what I thought of last night when I was watching Clint Eastwood's weird-ass little rant? And I hope this is what I think it is. Back when MASH was still funny, and I know that's totally lost on people who didn't grow up with MASH, you know, but back when MASH was still funny and McLean Stevenson was playing Henry Blake, and the guy who would go on, Wayne Rogers, who would go on to be a disgusting right winger, was playing Trapper John, and Alan Alda was Hawkeye and all that stuff. And back before he ever became Colonel Potter, Harry Morgan did a shot or did a role on MASH as General Hamilton Steele. Three E's, not all in a row. And watching Clint Eastwood talk to that chair, it reminded me of this scene.
Thing is now in order. General?
Thank you, Colonel Atkins. I'll make this as brief as possible so we can get on with moving this unit. Charges.
Read, Captain Benjamin.
Get on with the charges.
Charges. Insubordination, disobedience of orders, impersonating a civilian.
Thought I forgot about you in the storage room, didn't you?
It was a night I'll never forget.
I'd like to interrogate the first witness, Colonel.
By your leave, General.
Warrant Officer Martin H. Williams.
Yes, General.
Williams, I want you to know there are no charges against you. You simply obeyed the orders of a superior, the sign of a good soldier. Now feel at ease. Just tell in your own words the incident at the helicopter pad yesterday at 0900 hours. But first, a number.
Sir?
You know, a musical number. Well, you got it in your blood, boy. Just let it out. When the sun goes down, the tide goes out, the ducks stand around and they all begin to shout. Hey, hey, Uncle Five is a big beach feet on the Mississippi Mud. Hey, hey, Uncle Five is a big beach feet on the Mississippi Mud. It's big beach feet on the Mississippi Mud. What a dance. They all do.
You get the idea. Looks completely sane. Has a history of being sane. Crazier than a bedbug. Yeah. And that was Clint Eastwood. Yeah, but first, a number. Jesus Christ. Sitting there talking to... I didn't believe what I was... This is... Okay, so when's the... You know, okay, so when's this... gimmick gonna this is a joke, right? But it wasn't. Put me in mind of something else. Put me in mind of one of my favorite goofy pop lyrics of all time. So we'll roll it and take a little break and come back to your calls. We've got an hour of conversation radio left. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And yeah, not even the chair. 304-658-3333, 877-443-2366.
LA is fine, the sun shines most of the time. And the feeling is laid back. Palm trees grow and rents are low, but you know, keep thinking about making my way back. Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA is fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine, no.
Comes.
And no one heard at all, not even the chair. I am, I cried. Did you ever read about a frog who dreamed of being a king and then became one? Well, except for the names and a few other changes, if you talk about me, the story's the same one. But I got an emptiness deep inside that I tried, but it won't let me go. And I'm not a man who likes to swear, but I never cared for the sound of being alone. I am a stare to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. I cried. I am, said I, and I am lost, and I can't even say why. I am, I
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I am, I cried to no one there, and no one heard, no one said a word, not even the chair. I've always wondered. Because, I mean, that's an old, old pop tune, Neil Diamond's I Am, I Said. It sounds somehow profound. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the third hour of this Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I've always wondered why it was that that song stuck with me, because not even the chair always struck me as, but would you really expect a response from the chair? And every now and then, you know, the universe just turns around and things align, and certain things tilt on their axes, and if you hold one arm in the air and dip the tongue out or something, everything makes sense. How old was I when that song came out? How old as I am, I said, that all these years, and no, not even the chair. There's a purpose for old DJs in the world. It took until August the 30th, 2012, for me to realize that there was a purpose for the existence of Neil Diamond's I Am, I Said, and its goofy line about not even the chair. And we had to wait until last night in Tampa, Florida, for Clint Eastwood, doddering along in his what should be his golden years, to give it to us. Somewhere out there, Neil Diamond slapped his face palmed and went, I never understood why I wrote it either. Now I do. I was writing into the future. Time had folded in on itself, and boom, a guy talking to a chair, expecting a chair to listen, and having the chair talk back. I'd feel like I'd been gifted by something from the universe if I was Neil Diamond. I really, really would. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Play this for me.
No. What's up, Jim?
Why not?
No.
It was a good movie.
Oh, it was an excellent movie. He made some great movies.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
last night wasn't.
From that particular film to Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, and
well, shucks, I liked him as Rowdy Yates on the Rawhide reruns.
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, Letters from Iwo Jima.
That was simply brilliant.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And there was, you know, The Unforgiven is The Unforgiven is on my desert island list.
Right. And I'm
Are you the Duck of Death? Yeah, I mean, Richard Harris, really? Gene Hackman? Just pulling that cast together.
Yeah, he's a very talented individual, and I was really shocked to see that and to hear what he had to say. I mean, I thought, I thought that he was probably either drinking or had taken some type of medication, because even the cadence of his speech and the way he was behaving was just totally asymmetrical.
I think that's the gentlest I've heard it yet put, Jim.
It really was. And I was just, you know, it is number two. I was just saddened by it. Of course, I was saddened by a lot of the stuff that I heard from Tampa and some of the bullshit that they were throwing out. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they could have said, roses are red, violets are blue, I like peanut butter, let's fuck. Which made more sense to me than some of the stuff that they were trying to patch together and cover it with a veneer of the truth.
I'm glad you, honestly, I'm sorry you took me aback with that little rhyme. I mean,
well, my God,
that's
nonsensical, but
that's brilliant. You know, that's brilliant poetry. But now he did seem like he'd had a couple of cocktails backstage, didn't he?
Oh, he had more than that. He had something in those cocktails.
Thorazine dart in the neck, maybe.
I don't know, but I mean, you know, they dragged this man out, and they dragged him out of a very honorable career in Hollywood, and made him look like an absolute idiot and fool.
You know, Zell Miller
talking to an empty chair, and, you know, not saying it, but saying, you know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Zell Miller, the politician from Georgia, had a decent career before he showed up at the Republican convention some years back. And now no one remembers Zell Miller for anything but his weird-ass appearance at the Republican convention, where he wanted to go mano a mano with, or have a sword. What was it? He wanted to have a sword fight or something, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And the same things. The same thing just happened to Clint Eastwood. A brilliant body of work. Oh yeah, Clint Eastwood. Yeah, he's the guy that made a fool of himself at the Republican convention.
And that's how he will be remembered in the minds of a lot of people. I mean, all of his good work in Hollywood will just go by the board, and it's.
Well, I forget who it was, but last night I had a tweet or an email or something asking, and this will resonate with you, did Clint Eastwood attend the Admiral Stockdale School of Public Speaking? You remember Admiral Stockdale's crazy-ass speech? Oh, why am I here? I don't know why I'm here. When he was going to, what was it? He was running with Ross Perot, wasn't he?
You know, Admiral Stockdale was the president of my alma mater at one time.
Was he really?
Mm-hmm. Surely was. He was president of the Citadel. I remember Mark Clark was there for 2 years when I was a cadet, and actually I even taught Mark Clark how to shoot a bow and arrow, because archery was my specialty when I was a boys' camp counselor there in the summer.
I'll be darned.
Mm-hmm. Sure did. And so I had the opportunity of meeting Mark Clark, and he's a very tall, imposing individual. One too popular in Texas from some maneuvers that were pulled in Italy. But nonetheless, you know, he was one of the, I would say, more recognizable generals like Patton in the Second World War. But as Sophia would say on Golden Girls, I digress, and this is not Sicily 1922. One thing I want to tell you, and I've been meaning to tell you this for a long time, and when I was a child, I had a terrible speech impediment, very much like George VI. And it was difficult for me to even get a word out, and had to have a dialogue coach and a speech therapist and all that stuff. It was really bad. I was such a stutterer. And this is one of the reasons I think that I use things like I mean and you see and stuff like that. It's sort of like coming back in older age. And I apologize for that.
No, nothing to apologize that I've heard, Jim.
Well, I just...
I've got pregnant pauses on this program you can drive a truck through. So I'll be the last to criticize anyone's speech.
Well, I appreciate that. That's you're being quite magnanimous in that. But, you know, I realize that, and I view myself with a very harsh lens and try to make some sense out of what I say. But as of late, that's been in, I guess, in lacking. But away from that, when I finished the Republican convention and heard part of Romney's speech, I can't really see where he brought himself any further to being recognized as humane or human or whatever than he did before he uttered the first word.
That business of having him walk into the convention hall instead of walking out on stage?
Yeah.
As if it was some sort of State of the Union address?
Exactly, like he was doing the State of the Union address. And
well, the man walked like he had, what, a rod down his spine and one down each leg? He walked like a robot. With that sort of... I'm smiling because I have to smile, but I want to get away from you people. Look on his face.
It didn't engender any feelings of warmth or compassion or camaraderie to me.
He has all the warmth of a refrigerator.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's at absolute zero as far as I'm concerned.
And did you notice that passage in the speech generally, Jim, where he talked about how sad and disappointed he was in Barack Obama? You know, there is that thing for those of us who, well, and it's probably national, but I identify with it as a Southern thing. I would rather, Jim, have had my mother, I don't know, take a switch to me than look at me and say, I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed. Because that... Well, I'd rather took a whooping than disappoint my mama. And mama can do that. But for Bishop Willard Romney to stand there and lecture, and I'm not mad at you, Barack. I'm disappointed. Then what a line of unmitigated, unstrained, unrefined bull.
Horseshit. That's exactly what it was. And
I think more of horses, frankly.
Yeah. I think that speechwriter who may have composed that diatribe had written for several other presidents, like maybe Reagan, or maybe I'm wrong here. I'm sure somebody out there can correct me if I am, but this guy has written speeches for other Republican candidates before.
Who could deliver them?
Yeah.
If William Shakespeare had written Bishop Romney's address last night, it would have made no difference.
No, it probably wouldn't, because it's no matter how well the speech is planned and organized, it's the deliverer who basically makes it a success or a complete flop.
Have you ever seen those things on the internet where you can use little characters and you can type in text and they will and the little characters will say the words? It animates words and they talk a lot like this. Well, the same effect would have been had you just put up one of those little animated widgets up there and type Romney's speech into it. The man does not have anything approaching charisma, and he has even less in the way of a display of common humanity. Of course, I'm sure he would take that as a compliment, Jim, because he doesn't want to be thought of as common. Because it might remind him that he is the grandson of an illegal immigrant.
You know, the guy has the personality and compassion of a dial tone.
There. You did it so much better than I.
He really does. And unfortunately, these people were sitting there and when I saw the camera pan out of the audience, and I mentioned in my email to you earlier, and some of the women in there, my God, they were the hardest looking bad cases of cosmetic surgery I have ever seen. And then they pulled out Newt Gingrich and his spouse, what's her name, Calista?
Ballistic, yes.
I call her Ballista. I mean, God almighty, you could have taken that woman's shin and sliced open the Titanic with it, better than an iceberg.
Slice right through a tomato without a problem, just like a Ginsu knife.
I don't see how these, these women were hard and mean-looking, and none of them could barely close their eyelids.
Well, I mean, when they did, their shoes came unbuckled.
Exactly. I mean, really.
Wow, we're being real catty here, Jim.
Well, I'm just being truthful. I mean, this is what I observed.
Well, no, what I saw when they panned out over the crowd was a group of people who desperately wanted to get excited about something. And I would swear that there was an applause sign there, because even on the times when they applauded, it seemed like they were being goosed with a remote electrical device or something. Oh,
yeah,
this is the time when we clap for the bishop.
Like William Castle used to put in his film. Remember for the Tingler, when they used to have buzzers put in seats, it would scare the hell out of people when they went to see the Tingler. That's before your time.
No, it is.
Yeah, they used to do that in theaters. Galvanize people into screaming and stuff like that. And in theaters would have zip lines in which things would fly out of the screen or fly into the screen and stuff over the audience. And it was just real nuts. That's what the whole thing reminded me of.
Well, I saw something like that in a Pink Floyd concert in Atlanta one time. So, yeah, I get it. I get it.
And this business about this oath that he took, and what do these guys have? Do they have some type of traitor's gate that leads to Tyburn Hill?
You could say that. What it is that thing is stolen almost entirely from the Freemasonry ritual.
Yeah, they do have some type of
because there. If you understand if you have a working understanding of the dynamic of the mid-18th century or mid-19th century, you know that there was all kinds of bunko and hokum flying around.
Mm-hmm.
The Mormon Church was by far not the first group to advance, for instance, Jim, the idea that the American Indian people were the remnants or the outgrowth of the lost tribes of Israel. You can find that back into the 18th century. They were not seeing stones were used by bunko artists all over the country. And of course Freemasonry was big. You know, George Washington had been a Freemason.
Remember I asked you about the seeing stones?
Yes. Seeing stones were used by prognosticators and phony baloney visionaries, bucksters, snake oil salesmen.
Right.
And so what Joseph Smith had a genius for, and he had been in trouble before, Joseph Smith had a genius for trying to bilk people out of their hard-earned money. He was, in a word, a shyster.
Well, that tradition is carried on today, isn't it?
And so what he did is he stirred up a mixture of Masonic mysticism with imaginary anthropology, added in some Seal of the Prophets language and some polygamy from Islam, with which very few people were familiar at the time. Remember, the first copy ever of the Quran was brought into the United States by none other than Thomas Jefferson, and it probably remained the only copy of the Quran for God knows how long. So Smith appears to have had access to all of that, and then he ties it in with some Old Testament stuff and invents invents a rat, and of course there's also some Iliad there too, because he invents this Aeneid-like tale with Aeneas fleeing with his father on his back, and those are the people who wind up being Indians in America or whatever, and there's morons and nematodes or whatever it is, and it's all just this horrible, ignorant baloney.
Well, this, it is beyond the breadth and depth of my understanding. And what is very frightening to me is they're trying to elect this guy who is attempting to appear to be Chatty Cathy with a plastic twat who believes in this stuff. And if he should be elected, he's going to be the commander-in-chief of our armed forces. And
a bishop. You know, I think you were one of the first people I ever heard use the phrase a prince of the church. And he is that. He is a prince in his church.
Well, that's all well and good, and he can stay a prince in his church as long as he stays in Salt Lake City or somewhere away from, you know, being...
But I don't want anybody... I don't want a Methodist bishop. I don't want an Episcopalian bishop in the White House, Jim. I don't want a nobody's bishop. Because it is at odds with everything that the founders of this country ever imagined, ever envisioned for what this country would be. Sure, they tried to set it up so that the rich would do better at the expense of the poor. That's obvious. But the one place that they, you know, they didn't want a theocracy. And from Ann Romney and her real marriage snarky little snippet, to all of the, you know, and I'll reverence marriage bullshit last night, it's all there on display. He intends to impose, whether it's outright Mormonism, which I doubt, he intends to impose the credo of some sort of religion on this country by enactment of policy. And I, Jim, object.
Well, I can certainly agree with you there, because no president should do that. And as far as I'm concerned, the person who is in that position is the most powerful man in the world.
Yes.
And commands...
And this is a man who used the power of his bishopric...
...that is capable of complete, total destruction. And it's a very weighty job. And
this is a man who used the power of his bishopric to demand that a pregnant woman give up her unborn child for adoption by the church because her relationship with her husband had not worked out, and the church did not approve of her having the baby, and he told her if she didn't, that she would never get to go to heaven.
Oh, well, I mean, these Mormons are extremely... dogmatic about a lot of this stuff, and you know, I would suggest that you, again, if you can, get the film called Latter Days.
I'm gonna try to find it and have a look at it. Yeah.
I would think it would be well worth your while to see that film. It's a very good movie, and it's a very compassionate and moving film, and it shows just how harsh and cold and cruel these people are, and how they just basically, in terms of their own worldview, just see things in total black and white. There is no gray. It's just either this or that, and you don't need to have a guy like that with his hand on the chicken switch leading our nation. And as far as the speech contents were concerned, after I listen to some of the stuff, the exaggerations of all of them. I mean, even Clint Eastwood talked about 23 million people in this country being unemployed. Clint, I hate to tell you, baby, it's only 12.5. Not that that's any great thing, but it's not 23, it's 12.5 million. I mean, I don't know where he got his thoughts from or where he, obtained his facts, or if someone even bothered to give him a fact sheet. But I mean, hell, it was just total gibberish. But these guys are really slick. I mean, they try to portray themselves as being the saviors of the country and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and make these promises that in no way possible, in my estimation, or possibly in my estimation, that they can keep. And I would just hate to see them get their hands on power.
Well, they only want the power to get their hands on the money, Jim. I mean, if that's any kind of...
Well, I know that, but I mean, you know, there's more to it than that, too. If there's a power within the power of money and stuff like that. And what is concerning me, and I'll end on this note, what are the Democrats going to put up? What I have seen, is a photograph of Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and who else? Who else are they going to put up? And besides Barack Obama, I mean, the Democratic Party has lost a number of its luminaries who could galvanize people. They don't have a John F. Kennedy Jr. to give the speech the way he did in 1988. From what I can see at this point, and I hope that they will improve the venue there, or the people participating in the venue in Charlotte. Will be some personalities who have the capability of drawing a crowd and gaining the attention of people. I mean, one man like President Obama, I mean, he has made some mistakes, but look what the guy inherited. I mean, he's not a miracle worker. He's not a wizard. And the Congress he's had to work with since 2010. And like you said before, they just want to get that black man out of the White House, and they tried every trick in the book, from his birth certificate to calling him all kinds of names, being a Marxist or a fascist or whatever. I mean, you know, you can't be a Marxist and a fascist. Well, I guess you can, because, I mean, look at Stalin's Russia. That was state fascism. But, I mean, the doctrines are not really, well, I guess they are compatible. But, I mean, they've tried everything they can. Threats on his life. Talks about his wife and making fun of her. I mean, they've gone to every depth that they possibly can.
Well, look at that. Look at that one from that one delegate from Pennsylvania. We were offended that there was a Mexican in Epcot's America. You know, I hate to tell him, but the word Mexico comes from the word Mexica, which was the name of the people who were there when Cortez arrived and had been there for 10, 15,000 years in one form or another.
I mean,
somewhere on this continent. They're more American than Mr. Henry J. Doofus from Pennsylvania.
Doesn't that give you an example of this man's level of ignorance and what his worldview is to make a statement like that?
Oh, it's delightful, because his own county machine back in Pennsylvania is running away from him in droves.
Good.
Snyder County, Pennsylvania. County Commissioner Malcolm Dirk told the paper called The Daily Item, quote, "Americans are people of any race, color, or heritage. Cheers to the individual working at Epcot for showing what a true American looks like," unquote. On their blog where they published this filth about how offended they were to see a Mexican in America, Epcot America.
Is this idiot never heard of Emma Lazarus?
Sorry, no. This is the way they describe themselves on their blog. Mark and Irene are both pro-life, believe marriage is between one man and one woman, and are for open records and transparency, believe in very conservative principles and the Republican platform. You know, the one that says rape victims have to have their rapist's baby.
Oh, that's beyond the pale of understanding. These people aren't conservatives, Bob. They're just total reactionaries. But I can think
they're fascists, Jim.
Well,
just because they don't have the snappy uniform and march funny doesn't mean they're not fascists.
Well, you know, even the fascists, for example, even Himmler in World War II, because the SS had been bled white on the Eastern Front, recruited people from the Balkans, and they weren't Aryans.
No, he bore no love for Slavs or
well, he did.
Magyars or no.
Yes, and they had SS, they had SS divisions, and for people to be so racially pure. I mean, even they were pragmatic enough to realize that they had to use the people they could and compromise those ridiculous standards. In order to be an SS officer, you had to trace your lineage back to 1750 and stuff like that. These guys, well, they have a lot in common. And I'm glad this thing is over, but I hope the Democrats can bring forth something in unison that can help them in November. I really do. I don't know what the bounce back has been from the Republican convention. Have you seen any figures on that?
No. In fact, I had an email in from Darlene a few minutes ago. She said, I'd love to know what the viewership numbers were on the RPG National Convention. I've heard nothing about it from the lamestream media and find that odd. And she asked, did you hear anything? I'm wondering if viewership was so low, NPR and others aren't bothering to mention it. And the fact of the matter is, Jim and Darlene, that's the case. Because Sandra sent along the link last night that I mentioned that Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Chow on TLC's channel beat the Republican National Convention on every channel.
Who is this Honey Boo Boo Chow?
Oh, did you miss that part?
Yeah, I missed that.
She's the breakout star from a reality show called Toddlers and Tiaras about little pageant children.
Oh, my God, her. Okay.
And she's a little six-year-old who drinks something she concocted called Go-Go Juice that's a mix of Mountain Dew and Red Bull. And her signature trademark tagline is, a dollar makes me holler. I know way too much about this, Jim.
Oh, my God.
And so the thing is it's a celebration of redneckery, and it's captivating some portion of America. But anyway, the reality behind this reality show, however, is this. The fourth episode of Honey Boo Boo, according to the Hollywood Reporter, brought in just short of 3 million viewers at 10 p.m. And that's according to Nielsen's overnight ratings. What that means is that it beat out every channel's coverage of the Republican National Convention.
Well, I would dare say, remember back in 2003 when Parrish and Nikki Hilton had their reality show on Fox?
Mm-hmm.
You ever see that?
I saw a little bit of that.
Or Anna Nicole Smith, God rest her soul, when she was on E, and some of the stuff they were pulling. I mean, you know, God almighty. I guess it was sort of amusing at the time when I would see it, and I'd be shocked by it, but, you know, as far as the audience share is concerned, I'm sure that probably pulled more than...
Well, what it boils down to, in answer to the question, is that at the same time... among viewers 18 to 49, that critical demographic that I'm about to apparently leave, the closest was Fox News' coverage of the Sheets and Pillowcase event, and it drew in a 1.2 share in the same time frame. A 1.2.
Wow, that's not doing very well for Fox, is it?
Well, it's not doing very well, no, or for the Republican Party. I'm guessing SpongeBob or whatever was running over on Nick at Night or the Cartoon Channel probably outdrew it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when you look at that whole dog and pony show down there, the best I can think of it is... from the very best of the content that I can assess is just, you know, same shit, different day. Promises that can't be kept.
Racism, racism, racism. Dog whistle, dog whistle, dog whistle. Throw nuts at the black lady.
There you go.
Yell USA at the Puerto Rican lady. It's just, you know, I mean, forget it. You know, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. It's what Republicans do. It's how they are.
Yeah. It's just like I sent to you in that email that they all look like they had a real bad case of hemorrhoids and didn't have a donut pill to sit on. And the rest of them were just, well, like the guys wearing hats and,
Yeah, were you raised not to wear a hat in the house, by the way, Jim?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
Right. You don't wear your hat in the house. You don't need that. I mean, that's just,
I'll never forget the first time I had a ball cap on in the house and my father looked at me and said, expecting it to rain in here, son? Take your hat off.
Well, these people apparently just have their own set of rules and they think that anything they do is just great as long as they're looking in the mirror. But when I see them, to me, they all look like a bunch of assholes.
I don't think your eyes are failing, Jim.
No, they're not. And it was just, like I say, just a lot of contrived. Everything to me was just contrived and not genuine. It was just totally and completely ersatz and just fakery. And that's all I had to say, and I'm just hopeful that the Democrats can be a little more truthful and enlightened and really spontaneous. Because there was no element of real spontaneity among these people. It was all so well orchestrated, and it was...
It was scripted, but they all are. I mean, it's not going to be any less scripted next week in Charlotte.
I mean, you don't think so?
No. Everything will be stage managed from the Dan to Beersheba.
Well, you know, the purpose of the convention is not to have a script there. It's to express the will of the people and the delegates who are attending.
But the will of the people has already been determined. It was a little bit. I think it was a little bit more interesting at the RNC simply because of the shabby way that the weirdos of the Ron Paul cult were treated. They were not. It was not even allowed to be announced that Ron Paul had garnered any electoral votes. All votes went to Willard Romney, Bishop Romney.
Oh, I noticed that. And at the very end, they had all of his children up there and his grandchildren and this, that, and the other.
I did notice last night that they let that Romney speak who looks like an Osmond with that big old mouthful of teeth.
They did?
Yeah, I know. God knows why, but they did.
Well, who knows, Bob? You know better than I because you follow these things more closely than I do because I can only see it so much and I.
Well, there are some things that only fermented beverages will cure.
Well, there you go. Alcohol can do more than Milton can to justify the ways of God to man. That's the way I look at that whole.
And all God's children said, "Amen." Jim, have a wonderful weekend and a happy Labor Day.
Yeah, same to you. You and your family, and take care.
All right, thanks.
Bye. Good night.
Our good buddy Jim, and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston. I'm glad we've got a little time this time.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of fermented beverages, I'm actually having a kombucha.
Ooh, that sounds yummy.
It is good. And for people who aren't familiar, it's a kind of a tea, but it has this element in it that's a... it produces good bacteria. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For the stomach, which is, it's a big issue in this.
Yeah, probiotics.
Society. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, people have been on antibiotics for a long time. You may have been experiencing some issues. And so people are thinking about how many antibiotics are in the meat and all that stuff. And there's a growing consciousness around some health and nutrition issues, and I think that that can spill over into a growing consciousness around land and water and stuff like that, too. I just got kind of a disturbing note over Facebook from 350.org.
Oh, really?
You know, Bill McKibben's climate change-related organization, but it's a story that they picked up from Think Progress, and it's a story about how it's 93 degrees in Siberia, and wildfires have been burning out of control for almost 3 months.
Wait, stop. It's 93
in Siberia, and
on the last day of August. Actually, it's the first day of September now there, right?
Right. So, you know, it's not just in the U.S. where these severe weather events are taking place.
Well, that's going to make it a little bit difficult for the head of, who was it, Shell or ExxonMobil, who said, well, you know, if the climate change doesn't, well, you know, we'll just move to where it's nice again.
Yeah, and they just see it as, you know, I'm sure they've got some new drilling planned, and who knows what they're thinking at this point. Well, you know, it's spooky to try to get into the mind of some of these CEOs.
Oh no, you try that and you go running for the shower and turn it on. Oh my God, hot.
You want to call in the bishop for an exorcism or something.
Right.
the voodoo doctor or something. So it goes, and you know, to hear Romney last night joking about, you know, what Obama
promised he'd lower the oceans. No, he didn't. He was mistaking Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments or something, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But see, that climate change, that's a big old joke. Everything's fine, and if it's not fine, we're going to get on our spaceships and fly off to Kolob.
Yeah, that's right. And can you believe Obama said something about healing the earth? Hardy har har, I'm gonna take care of your family. You know, like they're not kind of related, you know, where we live and the health of our families. You know, endless.
Well, but you know, when we build the bubble cities,
mm-hmm. Right.
Where the 1% will live.
It was so interesting. Have I mentioned the radio host Enid Goldstein?
Oh yes, I know of Enid.
Such a sweet, intelligent person, and she was here in Denver for a while on a very low power station, and she made the best of it for several months. But finally, the station just kind of closed up. But then she was in Sacramento for a while. And I actually started calling her when she was out there, too. And then overnight, they flipped that station to all sports. And then I had kind of lost contact with her. And I woke up Tuesday morning here in Denver, and there she was on my local progressive talk station. And
wonderful.
Yeah, delighted. And she's her usual brilliant self. She's substituting for another person, actually, who took David Sirota's place, who's very good too, Gloria Neal. She's wonderful.
Is David just gone?
He's not. He's doing a co-hosting show with Michael Brown of FEMA fame. Good job, Brownie.
Oh my God.
It's strange how things pan out sometimes.
No, see, I'd be in a 12-step program after about 2 weeks of that.
You know, I there are definitely times when they both get on each other's nerves, and he's doing it on a different station. He's not on the progressive station. He's on more of a right-leaning station. They carry Beck typically, and
also did he get run from the Denver progressive station, or was this a better gig, or what?
You know, I think it was a combination of his own interests and the station trying some different things. David's not a morning person. He'd say that, and he did not like having to get up at 4 in the morning and coming in.
Oh, no, that sucketh.
I bet. And I'm like him. I'm definitely more of a night owl, and I could just feel his, you know, strain at some
morning. Well, I mean, I feel like this little 6 to 9 slot that I've got here Eastern time, it's my happy place. It's my comfort zone. It's my sweet spot in the baseball bat swing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, if you end much later than 9, then you're forever trying to get wound down to get to sleep. And if you end too much before, then you're all jazzed up for the rest of the night. And
mm-hmm.
I like where I am.
Great. And yeah, I think David's enjoying this other opportunity. They're together for 3 days, the entire, I think, 3 hours. And then, like, on a Thursday, David will have the show to himself, and then on a Friday, Michael Brown will do his own show. So, and, you know, Michael Brown, I disagree with him on everything, but I appreciate that he does hear, let progressives speak. He hears them out. And so we disagree, but it's not disagreeable, typically, anyway. So anyway, long story short, David's over there in the afternoons. His morning show was replaced by another local person named Gloria Neal. Very, you know, I was wondering if it'd be, it's not quite a serious analysis like David Sirota may have done, but it's a good analysis, and it's a very accessible analysis to people from a very liberal standpoint. You know, she's an African-American lady, and brings up a lot of issues that hit close to home, and she is just handling it beautifully, and she's funny and winning over a lot of people. But anyway, she was out of town or something, and she had substitutes this week, and Enid filled in a couple days. And, you know, back to the climate change issue, that came up, and I'm glad it's coming up, even though it's very difficult and scary and all that stuff. But, you know, part of what Enid does that's so wonderful is that she can take those serious topics and face them and kind of counsel us, and she does psychology and humor. At one point, this person called in, a lady, and she was like, the right-wingers who are in charge, they know what's going on. They've been denying it and saying it's a hoax, but they know the details. They know the science for real, and they're just jerking people around while they prepare themselves with their, you know, off-the-grid homes and their own aquaculture and permaculture going on. So they're getting ready for when the shit really hits the fan. She didn't use that word, but something to that effect. And then Enid kind of, you know, you can hear her kind of despair and distress. And then she finally says, well, let's just hope these right-wing billionaires aren't the cockroaches that survive all this. And she laughed about it. And I thought that was a great turn of phrase. Like, you know, we've got that story in our heads of, well, the cockroaches will survive, and I don't know, the way she worded it.
6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches.
Yeah, the cockroaches, I guess.
Oh, very nice, Preston.
And, you know, I saw where the cokes striked or stroke again. I've been mentioning how I see a relationship between, well, obviously the ALEC stuff and the Tea Party stuff and the think tanks like Americans for Prosperity. I think they're also connected to Alex Jones, who kind of postures as a radical person, and who we agree with on some positions like anti-militarism and anti-genetically modified food. But on one issue,
even his anti-militarism and anti-genetically modified food is a case of being right for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
You know, because he opposes those things because it's you know, proof that the
UN is going to take over the American nation and lose our sovereignty.
Exactly. And Glenn Beck's been also engaging in this tactic of co-opting issues and then tweaking them in service of other elements of power that he's actually serving instead of opposing. Thomas Frank pointed this out in a book discussion he gave. He was like, I was listening to Glenn Beck the other day, and he was talking about the public relations industry, and it was as if he was reading from a Noam Chomsky book. And then he said then at the end of his anti-PR spiel, he starts going after big government and unions. So again, the tweaking of it. So, anyway, so the Koch brothers, more recently, I was on Yes Magazine's website, and if people need some hope in the midst of this despair, yesmagazine.org.
I love that magazine.
Me too, man.
And I love and I love Orion too. Those are those are two that are real favorites of mine.
Yeah. But they had an article by a guy named John Robbins, who is a very wealthy guy, but on our side, and he does a lot of animal rights and diet work. He wrote a book called, not Diet for a Small Planet. That was someone else. But John Robbins wrote several books on food and justice-related issues. In fact, he's the heir of one of the Baskin-Robbins people. And part of his conversion to, you know, a little less heavy stuff was, you know, his dad's health issues. And anyway, so John Robbins wrote this article, and he wrote it about a book, a documentary called Thrive, which, again, if kind of on the surface, it looks like this very progressive, radical movie, and it involves people like John Robbins and I think Amy Goodman, Naomi Klein, Paul Hawken, some great, really important activists. But all of them have signed a letter distancing themselves from this documentary called Thrive, because it is doing the exact same stuff that we're seeing Alex Jones doing. It's this rap about, you know, genetically modified foods and, you know, need to do other good things. And, oh, by the way, climate change is a hoax, and the United Nations is coming to take us over. And
Agenda 21.
Yeah, yeah. That's another good example. Yeah, that Agenda 21 right-wing conspiracy theory made an appearance here in Denver in a comical way with this right-wing politician we have here who was talking about how...
Is the NAFTA superhighway part of Agenda 21?
I'm not sure if that's in it, but he was invoking...
No, I'm being... Just...
Oh, okay. Okay, but he was invoking Denver, the terror storm of Denver's bicycle program, and us having a bike sharing program was a sign.
Well, you know, from bike sharing program to Stalinist purges, you know, it's only one roll of handlebar tape away, man.
There you go. It's only an Obama second term.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I was looking at, last time I was in D.C., Preston, Ferg was with me, and he was fascinated by the fact that they've got these rent-a-bike stands all over D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, you know, that, he said, you know, Dad, that's a great idea. You know, they're kind of, they're red, and they're easy to spot, and it's not like they got a bunch of gears. They're very... you know, very low-tech bicycles. And he said, that's a great idea because, you know, you can rent one, take it as far as you need to do, put it up, and you're done. And I said, you're right. I think that's great. But then I went over and, you know, it's got this little computer-driven thing where you rent the bicycle.
Yeah.
And Jesus, God almighty, I couldn't rent one of those things on my best day, Preston.
Yeah.
It's like $12.50 for the first 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I'll take a cab.
Yeah. Do they have advertising on their bikes?
I didn't see advertising on the bikes, just for the, I mean, just the name of the bike rental company itself.
Okay, because... I don't know. I'm sure some of these systems are getting into, you know, public-private partnerships and trying to raise...
By the way, you got a comment in from the chat room from Onward to Dystopia. He said, Alex Jones is considered a fraud even within the conspiracy community. He's only in it for the money. And he says, by the way, Bob, did you purchase your survival seeds? Oh, I got a couple of bags of beans here. I figure we'll just plant the dry... save some of the dry beans and plant them. There you go. You know, I'm surprised. At any point in the Republican National Convention, Preston, did they manage to bring up the Agenda 21-driven communist plot to poison the minds of our children by virtue of the White House organic White House garden?
No doubt, and the talk was probably.
I honestly did.
I did a global industry.
Yeah, I did a global search and replace through the draft Republican platform. I just searched fluoride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see if we were still having our precious bodily fluids sapped, fluoride mandrake in little children's ice cream. Yeah.
And again, you know, there are nuggets of reality, you know, effective propaganda will have some elements of truth here and there. Like, there are issues with the UN and its soldiers and stuff like that, for sure. But, you know, the UN, the real issues that people, that the power has with the UN are, you know, they'll do a report about human rights abuses in Gaza. Can't talk about that. They'll respect other cultures. They'll talk about, you know, the whole World Heritage Site project that they have, all these different cities and cultural and environmental spots around the world that have been designated as a place to be protected and respected.
And speaking of those heritage spots, Preston, I have to tell you a little bit of inspirational something or another.
Okay.
Because it's his corner to work, I sent the story along to Dr. John. But I saw a story in the Washington Post the other day that I found inspiring. Anthropologists and archaeologists and people who are in charge of the cultural patrimony and matrimony of Mexico's ancient heritage have banded together, done sit-ins and occupies over the capitalization of the ancient structures of the pre-Columbian peoples.
Okay. Great.
Because, among other things, there have been shows done and rock concerts put on in front of Chichen Itza. Really? And they've drilled holes in pyramids in order to mount lasers for light shows.
Oh, jeez.
You know, but it's inspiring to see that these cultural heritage workers, by God, they've got a union, Preston. And they're raising hell with it. And it was a beautiful thing, and I said, yeah, go. And they were praising Paul McCartney for not coming and doing a concert at Chichen Itza with a laser light show. You know, the sonics that are involved in a concert of that scope cannot be good for that old stone. Or maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they built that well, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, yeah, and just the drilling into it. I mean,
well, and having, you know, 20,000 people stomping around on an archaeological site, it gives anybody who's ever owned a Marshalltown trowel the creeping horrors. Hey, Mom, I found an arrowhead. Well, just put that in your pocket, Johnny.
Right.
Oh!
Right. What else is up in? Oh, and the 2016 movie, that's now it's going to be in 2,000 theaters on a different.
Oh yeah, topic. Yeah, and see that was and just to wrap up on the Mexican stuff.
Okay.
The whole reason all of this commercialization is coming off, you know why, right? Because the world ends on December 21st, 2012.
Right.
And so we're, you know, the end of the world concert, the end of the world tour. Book your cruise now on Carnival and blah blah blah. Go to the end of the world concert at Chichen Itza. Yada yada yada. Jesus.
The Nobel Peace Prize winner Rigoberta Menchú, the Mayan Indian from Guatemala.
Yes.
She wrote a book called I, Rigoberta, and she's been smeared, as to be predicted. But anyway, she continues her courageous work, and you know, people ask her from time to time what's her feeling about Mayan prophecies in 2012, and it's not, you know, there can be, it's not the stories that we're usually receiving about.
No, and you know, one of the things that didn't get us nearly, you know, I would have put it on the above the fold on the New York Times if it was up to me, but archaeologists discovered another calendar, and it's got an even longer count on it that's way the hell out there in the future. That's the end of the world. But
you know,
let's not put that out there for public consumption, because this end of the world stuff's really good business and always has been.
Fear is so useful, and you know, it's the same with the word apocalypse. I was watching this program on the Bible on I think the History Channel or Discovery, and such an improvement from the right-wing telepreachers, for sure, and very interesting, all these sections from the Bible about concern for the common good.
No, you mean it wasn't all about, and their tongues shall rot out, and their heads and their eyeballs fall from their sockets, and they shall be eaten by little crows on the ground. No.
Yeah.
This stuff drives me crazy, Preston.
Protests at the banks early on, early Occupy action from Jesus turning over the money changers' tables and stuff like that. But
yeah, it's funny they don't seem to grab that. I mean, just there is stuff in there that's worth thinking about. I was doing a little edumacating with Ferg the other night, and for instance. I introduced him to the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, which is every bit as old as Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Yeah.
It just wasn't included because it wasn't convenient, because it was confusing and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was part of a, it was part of a, it was a, it was part of the canon of a suppressed sect. Really? Christianity suppressing another? Well, who would have thunk? But I read him a little passage of it, and I said, that's pretty interesting, isn't it? He said, yeah, that is. Because it's enigmatic, it almost sounds Buddhist when you read the Gospel of Thomas.
Yeah.
So I read that to him, and it was a passage about the first shall be last, and there's nothing that can be known that cannot, there's nothing unknown that cannot be known, and stuff like that. And I said, now wait a minute, son. And he said, what? And I brought up the media player, and I said, it always blew my mind. That is in a 1900-year-old piece of writing from the Middle East, and lo and behold, in 1967, you get a substantial portion of the human race singing Gnostic doctrine, and I clicked play, and it was on the Beatles, "All You Need Is Love," which is John Lennon's work.
Yeah.
And it reads like quotes lifted from the Gospel of Thomas.
Great. That's great.
And I said the church did everything it possibly could to suppress that, Ferg, but they couldn't, and it showed up 1867 years later. And he got that look that I love so much that I only get every now and then anymore, because he's a teenager and he's very world weary. He just looked at me, he had that kind of mouth agape. Wow, Dad. Oh, Dad, you're not such a dweeb after all. You know stuff.
Great.
It was kind of cool. I love our conversations, and I thank you very much for it. And you have yourself a happy holiday weekend, Preston.
Yeah, and I'll plan a vote for having a show on Labor Day. You think if you're up to it?
I'll be up to it. Yeah, I'm pretty well committed to it now.
And
because I've had a whole bunch of emails saying, "We'll be here, Bob. We'll be here, Bob."
And let's keep remember to if we want a social change, let's show gratitude to the workers all around us, the people stocking the shelves and making change and clean.
Absolutely. With a son-in-law who works at Walmart, they need all the gratitude they can get.
Definitely. And one quick, and also just a word of peace to the people of South Africa. And that.
Amen. I'm glad you said it. Thank you.
All right. Right on. Yeah. We'll talk later.
All right. Take care, Preston. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Preston's spirit simply is suffused with goodwill and decency. Indeed, peace to the people of South Africa. So that's it. Where'd the week go? I don't know, but we'll find out what another one will be like starting Monday. Remember, tell all your progressive radio starved friends on Monday. And let's see if we can't overload the server or something. Wouldn't that be fun? We will be live on Monday, Labor Day. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you, who share so much with us. The greatest of which is the finite time that you have and can never get back. I'm so glad that you think 3 hours of this program are worth such an investment. Thank you for your kind contributions to keeping this going. Thank you for your ideas. Thank you for everything. Thank you to our chat room moderators, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks, John Fox. At WhiteRoseSociety.org, thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org, AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Happy Labor Day.